We are grateful to have Dr. Jill Levine joining us. She's a researcher at the Center of Excellence for Suicide Prevention in Canandaigua, New York. So without further ado, Dr. Levine, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. So thank you for introducing our title today. I do have Kathy King and Kristen Valvo in the room today. Dr. Gutierrez, Peter Gutierrez is Peter Gutierrez is in Denver today. Hopefully he might be on the line. So hopefully between us we can answer your questions. So we don't have any financial disclosures. However, we have received support from the Military Suicide Research Consortium as well as the Vizintuve Center of Excellence for Suicide Prevention. As you know, suicide is a very serious public health problem among veterans. And as you can see on this slide, we demonstrate how rates of suicide are higher among veterans with serious mental health conditions. And these conditions include schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder, for example. Blister packaging has been shown in the United Kingdom in particular to be associated with reductions in suicide. In the United Kingdom, they had a regulatory change where they were required to start packaging paracetamol, which is the United Kingdom term for acetaminophen or Tylenol. They were required to start packaging it in blister packaging. And on a population level, they showed that suicide rates declined after the packaging intervention. And now, of course, that's an ecological association. So the point of this particular randomized controlled trial was to see if we did have a randomized controlled trial in the U.S., would we see that type of similar effect? Previous studies have been mixed, so we have some studies that found no differences in adherence. You can see the one we're citing from 2016. We've also had one study that was positive in terms of introducing blister packaging along with other pharmacotherapy and education interventions in a 1998 trial. And as you can see, the Von Kort study, which is the first bullet, did find an ICER, or an incremental cost-effectiveness ratio, ICER, of $1,592, and this should be per patient in this case. For the Bosman study, you can see the second bullet, that study was not statistically significant. So we do have very limited evidence on the effectiveness and cost-effectiveness of blister packaging, and certainly really very no evidence at all when we consider suicide specifically as our outcome. So before we get started into the meat of our presentation, let's do a poll question. What is your primary role in VA?
Thank you. So for our attendees, as you can see up on your screen, you do have the first poll question. So go ahead and click the response right there that corresponds to your answer. You can just click the white circle. So we know many of you, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what that added symbol is after the question mark on VA. I'm sorry that popped up. Anyways, we're trying to get an idea of what is your primary role in VA. Do you classify yourself as a student trainee or fellow, clinician, researcher, manager or policymaker, or other? And please note if you are selecting other, at the end of the session I will put up a feedback survey that has a more extensive list of job titles, and you might find yours there to select. Okay, it looks like we've capped off responses, so I'll share those results. 5% of our respondents are student, trainee, or fellow, 32% clinician, 11% researcher, 21% manager or policymaker, and 32% selected other. Thank you to those respondents. Jill, do you have any comments before we move on to the next one?
So I believe we have another poll question coming right after this one, so it'll be interesting to see what the breakdown is among our clinicians in particular.
Great. So we would like to know exactly what is your area of expertise, suicide prevention or mental health, pharmacy, academia, primary care slash internal medicine, or other. So please take just a moment to select your response there. And it looks like we've had just under half of our audience reply. We'll give people some more time to get those responses in. All right. Looks like we've capped off right around two-thirds of our attendees. So I'm going to go ahead and close this out and share those results. 44%, their area of expertise is suicide prevention or mental health, 33% pharmacy, 6% academia, and 17% selected other again. So thank you kindly, and I will turn it back over to you now.
Great. Okay. So welcome, everybody, with a particular pharmacy background. If you do have pharmacy-specific questions and we can't answer them on the call, for example, packaging technology questions, please go ahead and send them in, and we'll certainly get back to you afterwards. Okay. So this study that we're doing, that we're discussing today, is the cost-utility analysis of a randomized control trial. And I just want to note that the randomized control trial results have been published by Peter Gutierrez and his team. They were just published this year, and we do have it, the citation in our reference list at the back of the slide. For what we're talking about today is a cost-effectiveness analysis or a cost-utility analysis that happened after the conclusion of the trial. So this is a secondary analysis. But briefly, the trial included 303 veterans ages 18 and over who were discharged from inpatient psychiatric units or receiving care in outpatient mental health, substance abuse, or PTSD clinics. And this was all in Denver, Colorado. As you can see, they had to have one of the serious mental illnesses in this list. After giving informed consent, the subjects returned with all of their medications. These are subjects who get most of their care through VA. They did were escorted by the research staff to the pharmacy, where a research pharmacist repackaged with his technicians, repackaged those medications after randomizing the patients. As you can see, they had a very high follow-up rate for this type of patient population. That's one of the exceptional things about this trial, an 80% follow-up rate in terms of completing at least one baseline and one later assessment during the 12-month study period. And they found no significant differences between those who dropped out and those who stayed in the trial. So this is from, again, the original clinical trial by Peter Gutierrez that has now been published, and you can see the subject characteristics. No difference in age. We've highlighted some subject characteristics that were different between the two groups. So even after randomization, which worked very well on the randomization variables, there were other variables that were not evenly balanced between the two arms. And, of course, in the paper that you can read that Dr. Gutierrez has published, you'll see that they did adjust for that in their analysis, and we adjust for that as well when we're looking at the modeling of our costs. So you can see that in the blister pack group, we have a slightly higher proportion or a significantly higher proportion of subjects who had alcohol abuse or dependence. And then in the DAU group, which is dispensing as usual, that's the group that got the traditional bottle, pill bottle, you can see that they have a higher proportion of subjects with a surface-connected disability rating. So the treatment alternatives, again, that we're talking about are blister packaging. We showed you a picture earlier of what that might look like. These in particular were cold sealed blister cards with 28, 31, or 90 blisters. These are things that a pharmacist or a technician can pack on a custom basis in the pharmacy setting using hand-operated equipment. So each blister contained only one dose of one medication labeled with the date and time of the dose. Now, some mental health interventions will include, you know, multiple medications in a blister. The study did not. Medications that were to be taken as needed were each packaged on a single card, their own card, one pill per blister, and labeled accordingly. And if there were any tablets that were required to be split, they were split at the pharmacy, and then each half tablet would be packaged in its own blister. So that was one additional advantage for blister packaging for those patients. The dispensing as usual group got the typical pill bottle, for example, which we call a vial with a cap, one per prescription. And if there was a tablet splitting instruction, then the patients had to split those tablets on their own. This is a cost-utility analysis again, so we have to consider time horizon and discounting. In this case, We conducted our analysis over the same period as the trial, which was 12 months, so we didn't have to be concerned about discounting. We did translate all costs into $2016. We used the Consumer Price Index to standardize our costs, and then we updated them all to 2016 U.S. dollar value. As far as the qualities go, all subjects did survive the trial. We didn't have any overdoses or suicide deaths during this 12-month window among this group of patients or any other cause of death. We did calculate utility using the SF60. The patients during the follow-up period of the trial came in monthly and completed the short form 36 or the SF36. And as you know, you can use the SF36 to translate into utilities, which you need for your qualities. For the evaluation of the qualities, after we calculated them, we compared them to the standards of $50,000 per quality adjusted life year or $300,000 per incremental quality adjusted life year. These are the ranges from the literature. The minimally important difference, or the MID, for the SF60 was 0.033. For estimating costs for the intervention, we did use expert opinion, which was the opinion of our research pharmacist, on what he thought the labor difference would be in terms of a pharmacist or technician labor. How much more time would it take them to fill a blister card as opposed to filling a vial? And he estimated that is about 5% more time per prescription. We did conduct sensitivity analysis around zero or no time difference in the labor used to fill, or 10% difference. The cost of the medications we did get from the VHA Corporate Data Warehouse, or the CDW, and as you can see in the bullet, it does label or itemize the ingredient or drug cost separately from the labor that it takes to fill those prescriptions. So here you see what the values were for the packaging. Now, this does not include labor, right? We're just looking at supplies here, so you can see for blister packaging per prescription, that's the cost of for blister packaging per prescription, the first row is the labor difference. This is the labor difference in filling it, and you can see we have 1.05, which represents the 5% additional markup on whatever the bulk dispensing cost was according to the VHA CDW data. Then we have estimates of what the VA pays for each of these different packaging modalities. So the study actually used the Memory Pack 31, the Memory Pack 28, and the Memory Pack 90. So those are the purchasing prices from 2012 updated to 2016. And then we have the dispensing labor only. The actual estimate was $7.92. from the DSS system for VA, and then the cost of the bottle and cap estimated at 2 cents. So in addition to the pharmacy costs, as you know, we have to look at total VA costs. The assumption of the intervention was that it would improve adherence and also reduce mortality. So an improvement in adherence could drive an improvement in other outcomes, for example, reduced hospitalizations. So we wanted to make sure we accounted for total VA costs. We looked at total VA healthcare costs for all subjects in the trial for the 12-month trial period using the DSS. And as you can see, we looked at the medication costs, the dispensing costs, the inpatient and the outpatient costs. On this table, you can see the costs that we estimated for the group. So mean cost per subject ranged from $157, which was a patient in the dispensing as usual group, to $181,412, which was a patient in the intervention or blister packaging group. We did find that about a third of the patients in the trial were hospitalized at some time during the trial period. And then, of course, we'll talk about later, that does have implications for both how much of the intervention they were exposed to. When you're in the hospital, you're not exposed to your own blister package medication, as well as other effects that may have influenced the outcome. As you can see, we found no statistically significant differences by study arm in terms of the mean cost per subject. We did model those costs. We did see that the trial arms at baseline had significantly different baseline numbers of prescription medications. So we did run a generalized linear model. We used the modified Parks test to identify the gamma family as the appropriate family and used the log link function. We still found that the blister packaging intervention was not significant in explaining differences in costs across the two groups. The significant factors that helped explain differences in costs were being older and male at the same time, having total inpatient days of 12 months prior to the enrollment. So, in other words, having had a hospitalization in the year prior to the trial, and drug abuse or bipolar disorder or major affective disorder diagnoses were all associated with higher costs. Again, the intervention and the arm were not significantly associated with any cost differences. So for mortality and quality of life, I did mention that all of the patients did survive the study period. So as we calculate our quality-adjusted life years, or QALYs, they're all going to have survived the period. We had over 2,000 short or SF-36 forms actually completed during the 12-month trial by the 243 participants. The utilities at each time point range from 0.30 to 1. Now, you may recall that for utilities, a 0 represents death and a 1 represents perfect health. So not only the absence of disease, but the absolute optimal health, mental vitality, social and physical health that you can imagine. So you can see there's a very wide range on scores at 0.3 to 1.0. The qualities did not vary across the study arms. And you can see here we have the mean utilities by study arm. So we're reporting them at baseline, month 3, month 6, month 9, and month 12. And then we use the area under that curve to get the mean quality for the 12-month duration of the trial. And as you can see, for the blister pack, our quality of life years were 0.591. And for the DAU, 0.58, so very similar. And, in fact, if you look at the mean differential quality with a 95% confidence interval, you can see that it's smaller than the mid, the minimally important difference, and the confidence interval is not significant. So we see no difference in qualities between the blister pack group and the dispensing as usual group. So here's our incremental cost utility ratio, or our ICER, and you can see we've calculated that as the mean cost in the blister pack group minus the mean cost in the dispensing as usual group, divided by the mean qualities in the blister pack group minus the mean qualities in the dispensing as usual group. We did generate an acceptability curve to illustrate the probability that the ICER would actually fall below the cost per quality threshold. That's our $50,000 per quality to $300,000 per quality. And as you can see, this is the traditional table that you would report. You can see the mean cost in $2016. These are total costs. Remember, this is inpatient, outpatient, medication ingredient, and packaging cost across the two groups for the 12-month period of the trial. We have the difference and the confidence intervals for those differences. And you can see that we would report that the blister packaging is dominant, right? Meaning that if we just look at the raw numbers, it looks like the blister packaging intervention was both less expensive and produced a higher cumulative quality. However, you'll see in the notes that this result was not statistically significant. So, in fact, we found no difference between the two groups. No difference in cost or outcome or in the ICER between the blister packaging group and the dispensing as usual group. Here's our probabilistic sensitivity analysis, and you can see that basically what this shows is that both at low and high thresholds of willingness to pay, so we can think about $50,000 per quality or $300,000 per quality, the blister pack and DAU demonstrate similar treatment value, right? So we're just showing no difference, at least that we're able to detect through these trial data. We did conduct sensitivity analysis. You know, I mentioned that we did find that about a third of the subjects had been hospitalized. And, of course, if you're in the hospital, you're not getting the intervention. And you're probably having medication changes and lots of other things obviously going on that are very high cost or going to affect your quality of life much more than blister packaging. So we did do a sub-analysis only on subjects who were not hospitalized. When we did do that analysis, we still did not find any difference in costs across the two groups or in outcomes or in the ICER, of course. We also looked at subjects who had the worst baseline adherence. And the reason we did that is because in the original clinical trial, they did find that subjects who had the worst adherence at baseline actually showed a statistically and clinically significant improvement with the use of blister packaging. So we wanted to see if that might carry over to our economic analysis. However, we did not find any effect on the economic analysis. So our conclusion is that in this pragmatic randomized control trial of 303 veterans, we did not find any effects of blister packaging on quality adjusted life years or total VA healthcare costs or the ICER compared to dispensing as usual. Again, there are some limitations that are worth discussing. You can see that the veterans had a relatively high burden of illness, so we had relatively low utilities in both groups. So the mean utility, which is just the degree of happiness between 0 and 1, was about 0.6 and 0.59. So very similar, but 0.6 and 0.59 is a relatively low utility. So you can tell they have relatively low levels of happiness. One-third were hospitalized during their 12 months of follow-up. So this particular trial may not be generalizable to all VA populations. And again, the blister packaging effectiveness was probably affected by the morbidity of the patients, right, which interrupted their exposure to the blister packaging. And also, we didn't have a way to control for, or we didn't control for medication changes, which often occur after a hospitalization and could influence adherence. Finally, I'd like to point out that there are reasons for doing interventions other than cost utility, as you all know, or cost effectiveness. And in this particular case, blister packaging was a very small component of total cost, as you can see. So there may be issues like patient preference or public health priorities for suicide prevention that may encourage or justify the use of blister packaging beyond the cost effectiveness question, but we did not find this to be a cost-effective intervention. Economies of scale and technology can also reduce blister packaging costs significantly, so they were a very small component of the total cost in this analysis. But obviously, you could go to blister packaging on a mass scale would reduce the per prescription cost. Let's see. We do need to have more research done, I think, on tablet splitting. It's an interesting question, particularly when we get into the expensive cost of antipsychotics and conversations about tablet splitting of those medications. There have been some limited studies that have shown that patients, when they do tablet splitting, may not get effective dosage in each half of the tablet. So that would be an area of future research that could be important to consider. Okay, and just a comment, of course, we only included VA-filled medications. In fact, the entire study only included VA utilization. So we do know that there are patients who have dual enrollments, either in VA and Medicare, for example, or VA and commercial insurance. However, in this particular patient population with serious mental illness, they had significant utilization in the VA, so we're fairly confident that we did capture the majority of the utilization. Are there any questions or comments?
Not at this time yet. So for attendees that joined us after the top of the hour, to submit your question or comment, please go to the question section of the GoToWebinar control panel, and down towards the bottom, click the arrow next to the word questions. That will expand the dialog box, and then you can type your question or comment in there. We do have a few comments that came in. Thank you for this important presentation. Is it okay if I share this information with our colleagues? And I'll go ahead and answer that. Yes, absolutely. The slides are available. This has been recorded. It will be available in our online archive, so please feel free to spread this data and information far and wide. And Jill, while we wait for any further questions or comments to come in, do you or your colleagues want to add any final comments or thoughts?
Yeah, I'm looking at my colleagues here. I guess we don't have any particular comments right now, but I would, of course, be interested in hearing about others in the VA who were interested in, you know, pharmacy interventions or packaging interventions that might assist our veterans, particularly those at higher risk of suicide due to underlying mental health conditions. So I'd love to hear from folks who are interested.
We do have a question that came in. I joined late, so I apologize if you already covered this. Did you look at comorbid mental health conditions, or was this only if people fell categorically under one serious mental health illness?
Right. So we did have data on whether or not they had comorbid conditions, and in our regression analyses, we did control for those. But for to be the trial eligibility criteria were fixed, of course. So they had to have at least one of the conditions that were noted in the trial. So PTSD, major affective disorder, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or I got them all. Yeah.
Thank you for that reply. Not sure if you're headed back there. Okay. The person wanted to write in with follow-up. Do you plan on expanding this to look at further mental health illnesses, perhaps ones that are less severe?
So that's a good question. I think right now that research would really fall to Peter Gutierrez, who's our senior author and a clinician in Denver, Colorado, and I'm not sure at this point what follow-up studies he's performing. At our center, I'm supporting clinicians in doing their secondary analyses and economic analyses, so it depends on what whether or not there are any more blister packaging interventions. I'm not aware of any at the moment.
Do you have any next steps, quote unquote, for these research outcomes? Is there any plan to speak with leadership or any implementation researchers to get things, to get findings on the ground rolling?
So that's a good question. We did present these results at the International Society for Pharmacoeconomics and Outcomes Research. So that was in Boston in May. We also presented a poster on this at the DOD VA Suicide Prevention Conference in Denver in July. We do have a manuscript that's going to be going in for peer review, and we also submitted a final report to the Military Suicide Research Consortium, which is, again, a DOD VA joint organization, and that report was submitted at the end of September. So these things are in the pipeline.
Thank you. We do have a couple more people that wrote in saying thank you for providing this research to the field. That is the final pending question at this time. For any of those of you that selected other as your primary role, if you'd like to write into the question section and let us know what your role is and what brought you to this session, we'd happily hear that as well. While we wait for anyone else to write in, do you have a takeaway message or any concluding comments you'd like to make, Dr. Levine?
Well, I just would like to reiterate that for the 12-month follow-up period, we didn't find that the blister packaging was cost-effective. However, it was very inexpensive compared to other interventions. So when we're thinking about interventions, public health interventions or suicide prevention, cost utility is a very important component of those decisions, but it's not the only relevant component for intervention.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming in and coming on and lending your expertise to the field as well as your colleagues. I also want to thank our attendees for joining us. When I close out the session for our attendees, please wait just a moment while our feedback survey populates on the screen and just take a second to fill out those short questions. We do look closely at your responses and it helps us improve individual presentations as well as the program as a whole. So once again, thank you to Dr. Levine and her colleagues. And as you can see, she did leave her contact information up on the screen. So if you do have any questions that come to you after the session has closed, feel free to reach out to her. And thank you for making yourself available for that, Jill.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Excellent. Well, this does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar. So have a great rest of the day, everyone.